welcome everyone. It's a pleasure to see all of you. It's a pleasure to see also familiar faces in the audience. This is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for February 28, 2012. This meeting is now in session. So at this meeting, the council will hear first the internal committee reports and a portion of our discussion agenda. We will then break for lunch. We will then return for further discussion, for presentation and discussion on reports to the legislature on CCMS and the Phoenix financial system, as well as various funds that support the judicial branch operations. As you know, our meetings are audiocast live with real-time captioning on the California Courts website. As many of you know, portions of our meetings are taped, and then they are routinely broadcast later on CCN, which is California Court News. And for some of our meetings, we've had several hundred online visitors, an even greater number of listeners for the archive, the past and prior audiocast and video reports. So I say this, as you know, for their benefit, that when you speak, please speak into the microphone. And I remind members to, when speaking to each other, if necessary, to please address each other by name so that the audiocast listeners are able to better track the conversation and discussion, and the real-time captioning readers the same. New to this meeting, I want to welcome someone who's familiar to us. Seated to my right is someone we have all known as a very competent and accomplished regional director of the AOC, Jody Patel. Welcome, Jody. Following the resignation of Ron Overholt earlier this month, the council met and appointed Jody to serve as interim administrative director of the courts until it completes its search for a permanent director. And Justice Hull is chair of the search committee, and he will provide later a brief update on that front. I also want to thank Jody for agreeing to step into this important position at an especially critical time. I also want to thank Kurt Soderlund, who is here today, for making the temporary move from Sacramento to assist Jody as interim deputy director. I also want to thank Chris Patton for her experience and her to continue to serve the AOC at this time of transition. Thank you, Chris. One of Jody's first moves was to convene a meeting of the AOC managers to explain the change in the organization. And I understand that at Jody's invitation, certain judicial council members attended that meeting to answer questions, and that was Justices Miller and Hall and Judge Rosenberg, as well as Alan Carlson. And I understand that there were many discussions about the changes happening in the branch, and there was a good discussion. They also answered questions from the managers. And I know I speak for many council members and many, many others in the branch when I say that we wish Ron Overholt the very, very best in his future endeavors. As you know, Ron has been in court administration, I believe, for more than or over 30 years. He was first in the Superior Court of San Diego and then as executive officer of the Superior Court of Alameda. His work has been in everything, but significantly in the Trial Court Delay Reduction Act and the Trial Court Budget Act. He also spent 12 years here, as you know, as Deputy Administrative Director at the AOC, and he's seen and been at the forefront of the progress of the branch in the last 12 years. Last year, his accomplishments were recognized by the National Center for State Courts when they awarded him its Distinguished Service Award. We'll have an opportunity, I'm sure, later, not today, to recognize Ron for his commitment and devotion to the branch, and we look forward to honoring him then. We are at that portion, the beginning of our meeting, where we have and entertain all public comment. It's my understanding we have no requests for public comment. Generally, we will have later a person who will bring remarks to a specific agenda item, and per our rules now, or per our practice now, that person will speak closer in time to when the agenda item is called and not at public comment. So the first thing we will do is we'll proceed to approve our minutes for our meetings of December 12th, 13th, and January 24th. And if you've all had an opportunity to review the minutes, are there any corrections or comments that need to be made?
I'd move to approve the minutes.
Second. Thank you. Justice Miller moves to approve the minutes. Judge O'Malley seconds. Any further discussion on the minutes from those three meetings? All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposition? Thank you. Thank you. I am reminded that we have, and I've just heard, we have Judge Waters attending this meeting telephonically, as well as Member Angela Davis. And I'm informed that for your convenience, as well as our ability to be able to hear each other, that if necessary, please feel free to mute your button on your end regarding any interference on your end. Thank you for attending telephonically. Upon approval of the minutes, the next order on the agenda is the Chief Justice's report. And I will begin with the budget, which we will have further discussion on later, I'm sure. Hearings are scheduled on the judicial branch budget for April. And as many of you know, our ability to perform our duties as justices and judges increasingly relies on the restoration of our branch funds. And through the Office of Government Affairs, I and many of you, Benchmark Coalition and other court leaders, are meeting with legislative staff and members. Our first goal is to educate them about the cumulative impact of our consecutive budget cuts. This is our fourth year. And also we are joined in this effort by many members of the bar and other stakeholder groups like the Open Courts Coalition and, as I previously, Benchbar. In California, as in many other states, the bar has really stepped up this year to make the case for the courts on our budget. And as far as I'm aware, or certainly in recent history, this level of support and this activity is unprecedented, and another, I think, indication of the severity of the cuts and how it's being felt widespread in the state. Justice Baxter may have more to say about our budget efforts in the legislature when he reports on the Policy Coordination and Liaison Committee. I also believe he will update Council on the status of AB 1208. I'm also very excited to tell you about the Judicial Council Liaison Initiative that Justice Miller will go into with greater detail. But I recently completed the assignment of council members to be liaisons to the trial courts and to the divisions of the AOC. I know many of you are aware of this. You volunteered and you indicated what your preference would be in terms of the counties and the divisions. Remember, this was one of our initiatives that was discussed last year, also in our planning session, in an effort, I think, to increase direct and personal communication between council members and judges and court administrators, and also to better understand the work of the AOC. Many of you will recall the more formal judicial council visits of prior years, where members of the judicial council would travel to several courts at a time to meet with the judges and to inspect the facilities and to interchange what problems and concerns were and to share ideas. Well, that program was very fruitful, but unfortunately was cut several years ago as a result of budget reductions. So I realize that this liaison effort is a further commitment by judicial council members to get out there to understand and spread and exchange the business of the council. So I do thank you for these efforts. They're very meaningful, especially in this time of great unrest and concern about what's happening in Sacramento and what's happening with judicial council. And I look forward to what your review of your duties and as a result of this liaison and any ways we can improve it in the future. I also briefly want to explain to you some of the outreach that I've done on behalf of the Judicial Council as chair. Since our January meeting, in addition to the budget meetings in Sacramento, I also continued to visit with a series of editorial boards, briefing them on matters affecting the branch. I've also appeared at several public forums and before various bar organizations, including a general State of the Judiciary speech I gave at the Commonwealth Club of California here in San Francisco. And in preparing for the speech, I learned something very interesting about the Commonwealth Club, that it was a primary proponent of the 1926 constitutional amendment that created the Judicial Council. I was honored to receive this year the Person of the Year Award from Met News at its annual awards dinner in Los Angeles on January 27. I saw many of you there. Thank you for attending. It was a fabulous night. George Duke Majan, our former governor, was also honored. It was very strange to be on the same platform with him. But there you have it. I thank personally Mr. and Mrs. Grace for their efforts in making that event happen. By phone, I participated with the Board of Directors of the Conference of Chief Justices. That was our mid-year meeting that was held in Delaware. I chose not to go to Delaware at that time since so much was happening here in California. I recently attended the editorial board meeting for California Lawyer. The Chief Justice normally sits in an advisory capacity on that magazine's editorial board. On February 2nd, I addressed a joint meeting of the trial court presiding judges and the court advisory executive committees. There had been a request for those remarks, and so the remarks were shared with colleagues in the branch. I also had the pleasure of chairing the Commission on Judicial Appointments, where we had a unanimous vote for Justice Kathleen O'Leary, confirmed as presiding justice of the 4th District Court of Appeal, Division 3. And finally, last week on another visit to Los Angeles, I addressed several hundred judges, attorneys, and elected officials at the San Fernando Valley Bar Association Judges Night Gala. Again, saw many of you there. Thank you for being out there supporting the good deeds of our judges. The next day, I was the opening guest speaker at Loyola Law School at their Restorative Justice Conference. And the day after, later that afternoon, it's kind of a blur, I delivered the keynote at the Southwestern School of Law. It happens to be their 100-year anniversary. They were doing a program on women in the United States Supreme Court. And so I had the distinct and historic honor of meeting an icon, and that's Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who was there on the panel, had lunch with her, and talked about her civics education initiative, and she was very conversant on what was happening in California with our budget, so that was quite an opportunity. That includes also many of you were there as well. Again, I think showing that California's judiciary and bar leaders are very interested in moving forward our excellence and spreading the word about what our issues are and working together and with the other elected officials. This concludes my report. Next, we'll hear from our interim administrative director, Jody, on her report. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, Chief. I first want to thank you, Chief, as well as the council, for your confidence, for the confidence that you've placed in me as the interim administrative director. I also want to thank you for your support during these last couple of weeks and the next several months to come. In the interim role, I am committed to guiding the work of the Administrative Office of the Courts as a public service organization and staff agency to you, the council, as well as meeting your needs and the needs of the court and the public in the most effective and efficient way possible. You have in your meeting materials my written report, which I'm not going to go into, but that report provides updates since the January meeting on the many different activities of the AOC to further the goals of the council as well as the judicial branch. I want to add my personal thanks to that of the chiefs, to Kurt Soderlund, for agreeing to fill in as the interim chief deputy director. I'm equally pleased that Chris Patton has agreed not only to serve as administrative director, for her willingness to assist Kurt and I with a number of critical activities that the AOC is engaged in and will be engaged in over the next 3 to 4 months. I want to acknowledge, in addition to the chiefs, the leadership and contributions of Ron Overholt during his 12 years here with the AOC and his more than 30 years of dedicated public service. Ron has, in the last couple of weeks, been instrumental in assisting me during this transition as well, because there is a wealth of knowledge and experience that he has in his head, and doing that transfer has been very, very beneficial to me and will be to the AOC as well. I want to take this opportunity to share with you some key priorities that I've established for the AOC until the council appoints a permanent director. And after my interim appointment, I did share these priorities with the chief as well. And there are 5 principal areas, and they're not in any priority order. To me, they're equally important, and they're equally, I think, important for the AOC as a whole to focus in on over the next several months. The first is to support the chief, yourselves, and the courts with supporting the efforts of budget restoration, working very closely with Kurt Child and his staff in the Office of Governmental Affairs to ensure that we are very proactive with budget restoration for the 12-13 fiscal year. The second is planning for budget reductions here at the AOC. We are engaged in a number of different activities to streamline AOC functions that will then assist us in meeting our budget reductions for the 12-13 fiscal year. The third is to ensure that we align the branch-wide initiatives, such as CCMS, as well as the facility projects, with your direction as the Judicial Council, and ensure that we support you in your direction with regard to all of those branch-wide activities. Fourth, I think it's important for the AOC to begin to prepare for the report from the Strategic Evaluation Committee. Our understanding is that that will be forthcoming to the Council in early April. The SEC report will make recommendations, we believe, that we may have to address long before a new permanent director may be appointed by the Council. And so it's important for the AOC, while we're undergoing our budget reduction drills, to take a look at, you know, how we are structured and how we can better be streamlined, and then sync our efforts together with the recommendations that the SEC may provide to the Council in April. Lastly, I think it's very, very important that we maintain productivity and morale at the AOC. Our organization, as many of you know, has undergone many changes, a lot of questions, and a lot of negative scrutiny. My goal is to help our staff focus on our work and keep morale as high as we can while providing an honest assessment of the challenges ahead of us. I want to, again, in addition to the Chief, thank the members of the Council, Justice Miller, Justice Hull, Judge Rosenberg, and Alan Carlson, for taking the time to meet with our executive and management team about 2 weeks ago. Their statements that this is a team undertaking for the Chief, the Council, and the AOC was truly an encouragement and commitment to our staff that we will keep the lines of communication open during this transitional period of change. And I really, really appreciate your spending the entire day with us. These priorities, I believe, will ensure that the AOC is directing staff and our fiscal resources to where they are most needed, and I believe will place our organization on a firmer footing moving forward. I feel very fortunate to be a part of the judicial branch of government and to have your support to serve in this role with the executive team and staff that we have here at the AOC. I really believe our team and our staff of very diverse and talented professionals care very, very deeply about the judicial branch, and they put their hearts and soul into the work that we do. So, Chief, that's my report.
Thank you, Jody. Any questions on Jody's report? Hearing none, I'll ask Justice Baxter to deliver the PCLC report.
Well, thank you, Chief. The Policy Committee has had one meeting since the last Judicial Council meeting, and that meeting was really focused on 1208 and also on budget-related issues. The committee received a very extensive presentation from the director of the Office of Governmental Affairs, Coach Hiles. Kurt is here, and in the event there are any questions about either 1208 or the budget, I would volunteer Kurt to respond to those. I think the bottom line is that the report was positive. Most of you have read the reports in the press in terms of the Senate leadership as to 1208, and I won't go beyond that at this point. As far as the legislative schedule is concerned, the deadline to introduce bills was Friday, February 24th, and the Office of Governmental Affairs, as is the normal process, is in the process of reviewing all of these bills and identifying those that are of interest to the judicial branch, that impact the judicial branch one way or the other. And in future reports, I'll keep you informed of the progress of these bills of interest, including Judicial Council-sponsored legislation. As you become aware of specific bills, there have been instances in the past, and I'm going way back, where usually it's because of a sentence here or a sentence there. I recall the retention election legislation some years ago where the actual number of years remaining on a justice's term kind of slipped through, and it had profound consequences because the electorate would vote for those justices who had short terms left, but would vote against those that had long terms left because they thought they were too greedy. So it was just an oversight at that time. So that's just an example of the type of thing you may come across. And in the event that you do, be sure to call it to our attention to make sure that something inadvertent doesn't slip through. That completes my report, Chief.
Thank you, Justice Batchelor. Any questions on the PCLC report?
Kurt, if you have anything to add on either subject, feel free.
I don't think so.
Thank you. Next, then, we'll hear from Justice Miller from E&P.
Thank you, Chief. Since the Council's last business meeting in January, the Executive and Planning Committee has met four times, twice by telephone, February 9th and February 16th, and twice by email on February 21st and February 23rd. The minutes for those meetings are leaked to the meeting agenda under internal committee presentations and publicly posted on the California Court's website. During those meetings, we set the agenda for today's February business meeting. We confirmed conversion of subordinate judicial officer positions to judgeships for the California Superior Courts of Riverside and Alameda Counties, and we granted an exception from conversion of a subordinate judicial officer position at the request of the California Superior Court of Sacramento County. That, in essence, completes the report with regards to E&P activities. But if it's okay, Chief, I'd like to talk about the two liaison programs that have been instituted. At a planning session last June, the Judicial Council asked the Executive and Planning Committee to develop changes to the Judicial Council governance to make it more transparent and accountable. We wanted to be better informed and to be able to better communicate the actions that we take here at the Judicial Council to the judicial branch. You may remember that we made some pretty significant changes immediately, making it easier to give public comment and opening up our educational sessions, which used to be closed. As the Chief Justice noted in her opening remarks, we are now instituting two more initiatives that were approved in those governance meetings to improve communication and accountability. We will be assigning Judicial Council members as liaisons to trial courts as well as to the divisions within the AOC. Earlier this month, she signed the liaison appointment letters for council members, and they are included in your information packet and will also be posted online. By assigning these liaisons to the trial courts, we are making sure that each trial court has direct access to the Judicial Council, a point of contact to raise concerns and issues. We will rely on Judicial Council members to bring back to the Council any and all issues and concerns they may hear from these different assigned courts. Of course, several Judicial Council committees already have similar functions, the Trial Court Presiding Judges Committee that Judge Rosenberg chairs and the Court Executives Advisory Committee that Alan Carlson chairs. What we're doing, though, with the liaison program is creating another, more personalized avenue for the trial courts to have access to the Judicial Council. This is a new program, so we will continue to monitor it and evaluate it and make adjustments as necessary. I did want to say what I think the value of those are. I, along with Judge David Rubin from CJA, were invited to visit Stockton and visit with the judges there. We had a wonderful time. We had a great dinner with them, and then we both spoke to them. And to me, that's what these programs are about. I learned a wealth of information from the judges and from their staff about their court, about their issues, about their concerns. We had a great discussion after dinner where they were able to ask questions and receive responses. And I have to tell you, I have brought back a number of incredibly good ideas that I heard from the judges and a number of incredible concerns and immediate and critical concerns that they have. That's the value of this program, and it will help us keep in touch with them with regards to that aspect. The second liaison program involves connecting Judicial Council members to various AOC divisions. Although the divisions support the Judicial Council and carry out its policies and directives, a third of the council members are replaced each year, and new council members are often familiar with only the work of one or two divisions, depending on what committees they may have served on in the past. The AOC liaison program will help facilitate knowledgeable communication among those on the Judicial Council, AOC staff, and others within the judicial branch about how AOC staff supports and implements Judicial Council policies designed to benefit our branch, our justice, state partners, and the public. We expect and hope that with these liaison programs, especially with the AOC, that we'll be able to share with other council members any information that will may be helpful to the council, and we will ask the liaisons to report back to the council with regards to their visits and discussions with those particular divisions. Again, it's a new program. We're going to watch it. We're going to monitor it and evaluate it and make any changes or adjustments that need to be made. And then lastly, I wanted to inform the council that I had the privilege to speak with the new chair of the Strategic Evaluation Committee, Judge Charles Walkup of Placer Superior Court. And he assures me that the SEC is on track and that they are hopeful to submit their report to the council in April for our consideration. The Chief Justice appointed the Strategic Evaluation Committee last March to conduct an in-depth review of the Administrative Office of the Courts and to make recommendations to the council based on its review. The council has not been a part of the committee's deliberations. We're not members of that particular committee, and nor has anyone from the AOC. We do not know, and I do not know, what the committee may ultimately recommend. What I do know is that the committee has interviewed members of the judicial branch, justice partners from our justice partner system, from throughout the state, and that they have collected detailed information from all key stakeholders as well as from the AOC. An interim report submitted to the Chief Justice in January was posted on our website and shows the considerable breadth and depth of the committee's activities. The SEC committee will provide their report to the Judicial Council, and the Chief Justice has directed that the report will be submitted to the Executive and Planning Committee. We will then set aside a time and a schedule for the Council to review and study the recommendations. As is the practice of the Judicial Council in reviewing important and critical reports, we will establish a plan and a process for vetting the report within the Judicial Council, within the branch, and then we will discuss and review that and make recommendations at an upcoming Judicial Council meeting. I know that the Chief and the Council deeply appreciate the work of the committee members and the service they are doing for the branch. I especially want to acknowledge Judge Walkup and co-chair Judge Brian McCabe of Merced Superior Court for agreeing to chair the committee following the departure of Justice Scotland. And again, I know that the Chief and the Council deeply, deeply appreciate the work of the committee members and the service that they are providing to the judicial branch, and we look forward to receiving their report in April. And then lastly, for those on the phone, I'd just like you to know that I'm sitting and I'm not standing making this report. So thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Justice Miller. Any questions of Justice Miller on the update? Pretty exciting, the liaison report and also the SEC report. See no hands raised. I turn it over to Justice Hull for the report on WUPRO and search.
Very well. Thank you, Chief. Good morning, and good morning to the Council. Ladies and gentlemen, the Rules and Projects Committee has met twice since our January the 24th Council meeting. WUPRO met by phone on February the 2nd to consider four proposals for Council approval, including alternative dispute resolution, ethics standards for neutral arbitrators, and contractual arbitration. WUPRO had previously considered this proposal and reconsidered it in light of concerns by some commentators, including the California Judges Association, about one aspect of the proposal. WUPRO recommended that this item be placed on the discussion agenda today to highlight that aspect of the proposal. WUPRO recommends approval of this proposal, which is item one on today's discussion agenda. WUPRO recommends approval of the other three proposals, which are items A10, A11, and A15 on the consent agenda. Ruppro met by phone on February 22nd to discuss changes to the rulemaking process and invitations to comment. Ruppro considered possible changes recommended by the trial court presiding judges advisory committee and the court executives advisory committee, as well as those identified by Ruppro members in recent months. Ruppro will continue to consider changes designed to lessen the burden on the courts and to make the invitation to comment process more meaningful, and will continue its dialogue with the courts through the trial court presiding judges and the court executives advisory committees. In addition, on February 17th, Ruppro members communicated by email to approve technical changes to three restraining order forms. Ruppro recommends approval of this proposal, which is item A16 on today's consent agenda. Ruppro previously met and recommended approval of a proposal that was on today's agenda, but has since been withdrawn. What was item 12 on the consent agenda has been deferred to a future council meeting. Chief, that concludes the report of the Rules and Projects Committee. If I may take a minute, I will, as you mentioned earlier, give the council and those who are joining us otherwise a bit of an update on our search for a permanent administrative director. As all of you know, we are indebted and will be indebted to Jody Patel for taking this on an interim basis, perhaps as a demonstration of her wisdom. She has already said she would not consider it on a permanent basis. So our search continues. It would have continued anyway. What has happened is the committee originally had hoped to be in a position to make recommendations to the council for a permanent administrative director by this April's council meeting. We hired the search firm that I've referred to in the past, Robert Anderson and Associates, headed by Mr. Robert Berg, for the search. The first step in that process was and is the preparation of a brochure, an application brochure, if you will, that sets forth the qualifications and the job description of the person that we're looking for. Mr. Berg provided us with the first draft of that brochure in a timely fashion, as he said he would. The committee met and, in reviewing it, decided that there needed to be some change in emphasis in certain places and some editing, which we undertook primarily with the help with Ms. Beth Jay. What happened, we've been delayed a bit in that effort because, as many people know, many of us who serve on the search committee serve on other committees and have other duties with the council. And with the events of the early part of 2012, which have been have had to take some precedence, there was some delay in getting the edits to Robert Anderson. However, those edits were provided to Mr. Berg last Friday morning, I believe it was. I understand that those edits have been made. There are some other changes to the appearance of the brochure that we thought were appropriate that should be completed by the end of the week, and we expect the brochure to be available for use in the search by the end of the week. I should note that Mr. Berg has already begun some of his efforts in identifying potential candidates for this position, notwithstanding the fact that he has not had the permanent or the final brochure in hand. As matters stand right now, it does not appear that it will be possible to present to you a name or names for your consideration by the April meeting, but we have every reason to think that we will be able to do so by the June meeting, at which point we will be able to have your vote on hiring a permanent director for the administrative office. I'd be glad to answer any questions, Chief.
Thank you. Any questions on the process? Okay. I ask for clarification. This was our search for the administrative directors in last year. Was different in the sense that it's my understanding for the first time this branch, instead of using our previously established manual for contracting, had to first time our experience with using the public contract code. And that required a little more of a establishment and preparatory time in getting a bid and being able to proceed with finding a search team. Mary, can you just speak briefly to that? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes, the new requirements of Part 2.5 of the Public Contract Code became operative for judicial branch entities, including the council, as of November 1 of 2011. And it was about a month or 6 weeks before that date that the activities started about retaining a search firm. So we did conform the request for proposals and the contract terms to the new requirements of the Public Contract Code section, part that is now applicable to the judicial branch. So there was a little bit of time that was taken at that point in the process, but everything is in accordance with the new requirements, which are different and to some extent more onerous than the requirements that had previously been applicable to the branch with respect to procuring services, including consulting services.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for Justice Hull regarding RuPro or search? Thank you, Justice Hull. We'll hear now from Judge Herman. Oh, hand raised. Beth J.
I just wanted to note that one thing that I think there was speaking was that there were firms
used the mic.
That originally had expressed interest in the search and performed the search that decided not to put an application in because of
thank you. Judge Herman.
Thank you, Chief. As chair of the CCMS Internal Committee, I've spent the last month monitoring the progress of moving forward with the Grant Thornton report, which will be delivered to the council for the specially set meeting, which I'll talk about in a moment, as well as monitoring Deloitte's progress as our primary vendor, and finally working directly with EMP in order to set up the special meeting in March to address CCMS and branch technology. We had our telephonic committee meeting on February 23rd, we received a briefing from Kurt Child on the upcoming legislative hearings on the course of branch technology and the budget outlook and implications for the next budget cycle. Now, the hearings have been called by two State Assembly budget subcommittees, one of which is directed at technology specifically, and that meeting is going to be on March 14th. There's also the Senate budget subcommittee meetings that are set for April. We also discussed the status and details of a $16 million credit option referred to as a delay cost reimbursement with CCMS vendor Deloitte to be applied toward deployment activities and set to expire. That is, our option is set to expire March 31st, 2012. What the council will do with this $16 million either as a cash option or a services option. We also review preparations for this special session of the Council on CCMS and branch technology scheduled for March 27, 2012. We discussed the status of Grant Thornton's analysis of CCMS deployment alternatives, which is one of the subjects of the special session. The committee discussed a comprehensive report that Jody Patel is heading on the AOC side on CCMS and branch technology for council discussion. And myself and co-chair Justice Judy Ashman-Gurst will be working with weekly meetings with Jody Patel's team in order to prepare and have input into that report for presentation to the council at the special meeting on what we're looking go forward alternatives-wise, both with CCMS and more broadly with branch technology. The full committee will meet as well to review the report and the accompanying recommendations to be presented to the council prior to the special session. In the context of setting this as a special session is the concurrence of a number of events, the legislative committee hearings I spoke about, as well as the fact that our option, the Deloitte option, expires on March 31st, as well as the expectation of the delivery of the Grant Thornton report. Finally, we did review the council's existing policy adopted in 2006
on the funding process and delegation of authority for allocating the costs of statewide administrative infrastructure and technology initiatives. Do we have enough adjectives and Latinate words? Basically, part of our committee's inventory is to figure out how we address issues with those courts that have failing legacy systems. And once the need is determined, how are they to be funded in terms of whether the AOC contributes primarily to the funding or the courts themselves contribute to the funding in terms of their replacement legacy systems. And to some degree, the 2006 policy sort of parallels the emergency needs that we've dealt with most recently in terms of the San Joaquin Court, for example. So anyway, that policy has been reviewed. It is in our inventory. We will make a determination within the committee and working with AOC staff in terms of what changes may need to be made to that policy. And we're going to then bring that, of course, back to the council. And I think our current thinking with it, since it is a policy that does go back to 2006, before the 2007 initiation of the development of V4, that we probably need to bring it back to both SEAC as well as trial court presiding judges to get input from the trial courts on what their vision is and what they see as far as the development of this policy to assist the trial courts with, one, either failing legacy systems, or two, a need to upgrade an existing system, or three, a need to replace an existing system just for better efficiencies. So thank you, Chief. Any questions?
Thank you, Judge Herman. That concludes the four internal committee reports. So on our agenda, not hearing any further discussion of the contents of those reports, we these proposals and recommendations, A1 through A16 minus A12, is reflected in our minutes. Just for those who might be listening and understanding our consent calendar better, the Executive and Planning Committee places items on the consent calendar, and that is in consideration of the council meeting time that we have. A placement on the consent calendar in no way reflects the significance of a proposal. Prior to the meeting, any council member may request that an item be moved to the discussion agenda. And I anticipate, given our liaison efforts and our public comment efforts and our outreach efforts and our public meeting efforts, that if there are items on the consent calendar, that there's ample opportunity for notice to council to remove that now that we have these many ways that our calendar and our items can be discussed beforehand. So for this meeting, having heard none, those items A1 through A16 are adopted. And thank you. And through I. A1 through A16 and B-I.